Chad's a good antenna builder. I got to give you that. He's good at building them.
I find it every time I pick up a handheld with I changed out all the antennas that the manufacturer gives you with a handheld. None of them are any good. And most of the ones that I have that are good are telescopic. It's unhandy to use. You can't carry it around fully extended, you see. So they're telescopic, so you can put it down and, you know, carry it, store it, whatever you need to do. But a handheld, it only works connected to a good antenna. So my station is a mobile radio, very capable, more capable than I can use. I had trouble the other night. I hope this makes you laugh. It almost made me cry. I was, let's see, how did this work? So I was listening. All right, well, first of all, I have to say that this is there are two radios in this receiver. Let's call them the A side and the B side, because they're one's on the left and one's on the right. There's actually two full radios inside, to listen and also to transmit. So if you're not careful about the way that you control the radio, you could be listening to one repeater and transmitting on another. And that's exactly what I did. And I didn't know that I was doing that. It's embarrassing. I'm silly, something like that. So the radio has more functionality than I use. It also does cross-band repeat, when I've had no function or no use for that. It'll generate as much as 50 watts. I don't ever use 50 watts output, because I run this radio on a battery, and that would just suck the battery down real quick. Anyhow, there are all kinds of options where the radio is concerned, and all kinds of options where the antenna is concerned. I feel fortunate to be gifted this very good antenna that I have. It really works well for me. KK4JBQ.
For LZI, well, this 8900 is meant to be a mobile too, but it's very similar to that. It's capable of dual receiving, cross-beam repeating. On this one here, I don't know about your Kenwood, but on this 8900, there's a thing up in the right-hand corner that you can move either way on either side of it, where it says MAIN, main. When you see that, on this, and you know you're on the side that you can transmit on. I see that up there in the corner of the display. I know which side it's on and which side that I'm capable of transmitting on. That's what you have to look for on this and here to know which side you're on.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. That's, there's some way to let the operator know which one they're speaking on. You know, there would have to be. But it's not very obvious. And I just don't use that function. I keep the other radio on the NOAA weather radio, you know. And it's only to receive. You don't transmit on that. But I had been listening to, I took it just briefly, and this was my mistake, I suppose. I was trying to listen to one repeater, and I was trying to listen to two repeaters at once. I was listening to the Mount Mitchell repeater, and I was listening to this repeater. And so I thought I was talking on this repeater. I meant to do that. But when I pressed the key, I was transmitting over to the Mount Mitchell repeater. And I don't know. You can't know what was going on because you're not listening to that side. You're listening to the other side. And so I don't know if I talked over somebody who was talking, but it made no sense, I'm sure. Whatever it was I said, I don't remember now. It just puts you in a bad situation. It taught me a lesson. And there are, you know, I realized my error, and I knew I had, you know, it's just operator error. That's what it is. KK4JBQ.
Well, I've seen other people with these 8900s. I know it's capable of cross-band repeating. I've seen other people do it with theirs. As you said, my competence with these microprocessor rails is about like my computer. I know how to do it, but I don't know how to do it. And since I don't know how to do it, I don't do it. And I'm sitting here looking at it now, and where I see that it says M-A-I-N main in the corner, that's how I have to kind of be sure that I'm where I should be. You know, as you said, every radio is different, but that's how the 8900 is. I have to look up real close to be sure. Like right now, it's on the left side here. Where the M-A-I-N
main is at. A good point. Makes, you know, this whole conversation has made me think about various times that someone's going to want to know that, you know, they're going over a certain frequency, their transmission's going over a certain frequency. In a radio studio, you have the on-air light. And whenever the microphone is open, the on-air light is on to let everybody in the studio know that, you know, for one thing, they should be quiet. If whoever's talking is not in a soundproof room, that's a possibility too, of course. But these portable radios, they're not mounted in your line of sight. And the printing on them is, you know, like 4 feet away and impossible to read. I would rather think, especially with how little current it takes to light an LED, that one side or the other, if it's arranged like this Kenwood, is one panel on the left and one panel on the right to indicate which one you're going to transmit on. When you press the push to talk, you have a little indicator light. And you can tell from the left to right, there might be only 4 inches that separate these two. You could put a different color LED on the left than on the right. Just some better way to know which one you're transmitting on. Gracious me. Well, yeah. I use this radio in the car also. That's where it was meant to be used. And the microphone is handy. And the microphone has, you know, a button panel on the front of it. I got used to talking into the buttons. It's possible to get so confused with this radio. You put the buttons on the back and you're talking, you know, you're talking to the back of the microphone. That is some people's problem with this particular mic. But anyhow, so I pick it up, and I can do most whatever I want to do with the push buttons on the microphone. I don't have to touch the radio. The radio is at least 4 feet away from me. It's over on the passenger side where I had to mount it. Very inconvenient to operate. And you just can't check it that often. Your eyes should be on the road. Am I right? Your eyes should be on the road. Anyway. Whatever the constraint was, they didn't choose to make it very operator friendly. I'll put it that way. Anyhow, Andy, let's see, what time is it getting to be? Got to keep an eye. Oh, we're doing okay on time. Anyway, it's good to talk with you. I'm sorry that Gary didn't have more check-ins tonight. He could still be running. He has been. He's held the net open longer than this, and it's awfully interesting. I enjoy listening as much as I do talking. You might not believe me when I say that, but it's true. KK4 JPQ.
Modular, you can think of the microphone and the switches inside, the buttons that may be on it. You know, that's another thing. What is failing, like on mine here, is the cord. So if you found one, you know, maybe it's old stock. Might not be even be used. Maybe it's been used and it's still in good shape. Well, you could take that thing, as long as it has 8 wires in it. That's important. 8 separate wires. Because they're all used, you know. And you can make up your own cord and attach it. You know, the RJ45 is just a bigger version of the RJ, what is it, RJ11. That was kind of small, used in telephones. The RJ11, I believe, was in telephones. But it's much the same way. You have a little lever that's molded into it. The whole thing's made of plastic, of course, but a little lever. You push the lever down and pull it out. When you push it into the jack, it clicks. And it pretty much is there and will not pull out without, you know, that's a fine design. RJ45 is bigger. Anyway, I just looked at my cord. I can count the wires because the reason this thing is failing is because the covering on the outside is chipping away. It's just disintegrating. And it's not had hard use, believe me. It's not had hard use. But it's just dried out or something, and it's just chipping and falling to pieces. Anyway, if you found one that you like better at a ham fest, or even if you found one new and you could buy it that way, guaranteed, well, you could make up the thing as long as you could attach. See, when they make these, one way that the manufacturer will be different from anybody else, right? What pin 1 has and what pin 8 has, you know, it can all be switched around, you see, to make it difficult to use one manufacturer's curly cord on another Yeah. So the color coding, that helps a lot. You know, keep the color coding correct all the way through, and it would work just fine. A better curly cord might work just fine. But you will have to have that special crimper to attach the RJ45 on both ends. And then if you could, then you wouldn't be... See, this stretched, not 4 feet long. Now, it'll stretch. You can pull on it, that would be a bad idea. Pull on it real hard, and it might go to 6 feet. But just stretching it enough to take the slack out, it reaches about 4 feet. And that's not a lot. So if you're going to replace it, think about the length. You know, either match the length if you were pleased with it, or get something longer. You know what I'm saying by that? When you're replacing it, get something that's as long as you need it to be. KK4JBQ.
Someone else coming in or not. But maybe they're having problems like I had earlier. I don't know. You was talking about that for the modular plug. I don't have that. That's just it. I don't have all this equipment for doing it. But it just gnaws at me that a radio that's worth $600, as I've told this thing is worth, that I bought in 06 to have such sorry mic cords. You're right. These cords, they break down at next to nothing. And these here, where I'm at on this, ain't being abused. It stays in here all the time here by this radio inside. Not even sitting inside the sunlight in a window or anything. It's just the cheapness, as you saying, way they build these cords, but then you take a look at older ones, and I have, even that 2400H Yaesu I got that dated to 1993, it won't do digital tones, but the mic cord on it's even better than what it is on these newer Yaesus. Of course, it's also a lot thicker radio than these newer ones as well, so there's pluses and minuses to everything, but the older radios had the better cords. And obviously the 600 that is worse is strictly the radio here. It ain't the cord, because the cord, you'll go through a dozen of them over a period of years if you use it that long.
I realize what you say is true. The unavoidable fact is that the microphone is what you and I hold. It's the closest thing to us. I haven't seen, you know, the radio that I'm using has a detachable front face. So as far as the radio body is concerned, I haven't seen that in years. It's over here behind other things, down, you know, out of sight. But the panel that's removable, I have that, you know, right across from me. And the thing that I hold in my hand is the thing that keeps breaking down. It's possible, you know how, I don't know, I discovered this even as a little boy. As a little boy, I was taking things apart. And back then, you know, this was 60 years ago. Back then, things were made really well. But now coming forward, let's say going back 20 years ago, even before then, maybe 40 years ago, manufacturers decided that if their product would work when they took a component out, well, they saved a lot of money. That component might only cost, you know, 10 cents. But they made 40 million of them. And 40 million dimes is a lot of money. So what they would do, believe it or not, I heard this and I know it's true, they would make something just as the engineers designed it. And it worked just as the engineers wanted it to work. And then they started taking pieces out. Now, if it stopped working, they put that piece back. But they take your components, you know. They would take another component out, and if it still worked, well, they saved all the money that it was going to take to use that component in the million or 2 million that they would be making. It makes no sense. But that's, and that was law years ago. So things are just not, they're just not made as good as they once were. Talk to anybody about a recently replaced refrigerator. when I was a little boy, we had a refrigerator. We moved that thing 3 times. That little refrigerator must have worked for 25 years before it gave the first lick of trouble. And I know I've talked to other friends of mine who have modern refrigerators. They're more complicated, of course. Ice makers, and they have refrigerators that have computers in them now. And, you know, you can talk to your refrigerator and tell it, well, if you just visited the inside of the refrigerator and you're nearly out of milk, you tell the refrigerator to remind you to buy milk. And it would remind you. Anyway, such a thing as that. Anyway, they're not made as well as the refrigerators of years ago. I've had friends that have had refrigerators for 5 years, and they've had to replace the thing. It was not repairable, or it was too expensive to repair. It's just such a sad situation. KK4JBQ.
4LZI, well, this and only, I believe yours is a dual bander that you use. This 8900 is a quad bander, but it has the removable faceplate on it too, but I've never removed it because I've always used it here. So I never removed the faceplate, but it is capable of that. Talking about freezers and refrigerators, I remember my parents buying a Sears Cold Spot big deep freeze in 1974. And it went out here, I guess, let's see, that had to be about something like 3 or 4 years ago. And it had been in service here all these decades, but it went out then. And that's finally when it went out, because me and my sister had to get the stuff that had went bad in when it did finally go, the compressor, and it went out and get rid of it. But it was a big monstrosity, and it lasted a very long time, as you say.
There's a special phrase that's used I think it's generally understood, although initially it was denied that this was a thing, but it's been a thing and proven to be true. It's called planned obsolescence. You know, you can sell something once, you know, for a period of time. But if you sell something that's made so well that it lasts for 30 years, you're not going to sell that customer the next one, even if they like your brand. You know, you're not going to sell it because the old one's still working. So put your thinking cap on and design failure into a product. Let's keep it on refrigerators or freezers, whatever. You design it to fail in, let's say, 15 years. Well, it worked pretty good. It worked good for 15 years. You go to replace it, and you're going to maybe stick with that same brand, and they'll sell you another one. If they sold you the first one and it lasted for 30 years, they're losing a sale. Do you see what I mean? They're losing a sale. And planned obsolescence. It's a real thing. It truly is. And we don't have, it's been in the news in places that I've read about, well, it's a modern concept, the right to repair. Let's just talk about a cell phone, for instance. You purchase a cell phone, and I can use myself as an example. Donna has a brand new cell phone, and we'll just use a number. It's a model 16, okay? And I use the same brand, and it's a model 7. And so that's 9 models, and they did go 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. They had that many models in between mine and hers. Hers is better. It does more things. But mine does all I need it to do, you know, all I would ever need it to do. And I hope it will last me until I'm gone. I don't want to have to replace it with something brand new that I'd have to get used to. Cell phones are not easy to use, not for me. And anyway, so the right to repair it just means a lot for a manufacturer. It means that you have to make it so people can take it apart without destroying it, for one thing. If the consumer has a right to repair, if they're handy. And I don't know how far this is going to go or how deep into consumerism this is going to be, but for crying out loud, it sounds good in one way, but it sounds dangerous in another way. To, you know, the right to repair would mean that the manufacturer would have to make repair parts available to you. If there was special equipment necessary, and in the way of just speaking of a cell phone, you know, there's no way to open it up without going through the screen. You've got to take the screen off. And when you button it up again, you've got to put the screen back on. It would be a challenge even for a handy person to do that. And I can understand how, you know, if that be made to be waterproof and stuff like that, or at least water resistant, it's a challenge, you know. I think it's a good concept, the right to repair, but it's not realistic in some things. KK4, JPQ.
Well, see, this day and time is very rare, as you say, about repair. Now, this don't have to do with refrigerators and all like that, but I was talking about the freezer, even though it comes from Sears too, but that old silver tone from 1940 on the other side of the room I got there that my great aunt bought. We both knew they used to be Sears catalogs in the old days, you know. They bought that Sears radio over there. It was originally built by Aircraft. Aircraft's been gone for decades. And now Sears also is gone. Sears itself's gone. So, plus they had also a lot of Hallicrafter's ham gear that was built. Because I've seen the 1962 catalog about that. A lot of ham gear. Hallicrafter's ham gear that they sold back in 1962. Hallicrafter's was gone before Sears was gone. Now Sears is gone too. And as a result, as you said, repair one time today, they'd rather you not, or they're going to make it as difficult as they can for you to try to.
Andy, I didn't know that old amateur radios that they sold Hallicrafters. Wow. I have learned over time, I have heard that Sears would sell stuff you would not imagine that they would sell. You know, they used to sell houses. They would sell all the parts and pieces you would need to make a two-bedroom house. All the lumber. They would, all the nails and the shingles for the roof and the windows, and they would put all that on a truck. And this was way back in an earlier day when things didn't cost what they cost now. So you could order a house. Let's say it's $800. The whole house, all the materials to make it, and it would be shipped on a big truck, pull up in front of your property where you hope to build the house. And the people built houses. There are some still standing, I understand. Sears houses. And that's just unheard of for most people. I had never heard of it before, maybe a couple, 3 years ago, after Sears had already gone out of business. I used to work for Sears. I worked in a retail store. It was many years ago, over 30 years ago. And it was a fine business, a proud business, long history. I didn't see it coming. I only worked for them for maybe 4 years or something like that. But anyway, I didn't see it coming. They didn't either, I suppose. KK4, JBQ.
KI4LZI. My family here picked up about 1962 Sears catalog from out here at the flea market at Pigeon some years back. That's how I found out about the ham gear. There's a couple of pages in there, just all kinds of Hallicrafters gear in there. And you know, back in those days, most everything was HF, it was. And as a result, you had separate transmitters and receivers there. You did. And they had everything, too, then was vacuum tube as well. But there was a time there was a big sale of Hallicrafter stuff back in the early 60s. I'm trying to remember. Seems like the receiver was a SX-140. Capable receiving AM and single sideband. And the transmitter was a T40 transmitter. All it was capable of doing was AM and CW on HF. That's one that I remember the most that stuck out in my mind. And they had some other gear there, but those are the two that I remembered the most.
I know you to be a real history buff. And this hobby is full of history. absolutely chock full of history. And you don't have to step very far back, maybe 50 years or so. And I've never operated a radio where I had a receiver on my left and a transmitter on my right. And when I transmitted, I'd have to switch both the receiver off and the transmitter on. And then when I wanted to receive, just switch them both back the other way. It took a while before they made it convenient. Just pushing a button here on this microphone causes the, you know, my radio to do that. I don't have to think about it. But, you know, it would keep operators of that time, it would keep them real busy. And you wouldn't want to transmit with your receiver on. You just blow it up. KK4JBQ.
4LZI. Well, those, like you said, those QSTs you get when they talk about old radio there, classic radio, I learned a lot of that also out of that, too. About in the 70s is when the transceivers really started coming into being. The transceivers in the 70s. When your helicopters went out of business, your Hamlins, your Nationals, up until then, most stuff was separate receive and transmit. And you also go to that RadioBoulevard.com website and look at some of the radio gear there. A lot of that is separate receive and transmit.
But it used to be made that way, and if you were of a mind to do it, you could still build your own radios. Speaking of QST, I don't know, this must go back 3 or 4 years, no longer than that. They had on the front cover, I think it started with a power supply, because the power supply is something both the receiver and the transmitter can use. And to use either one of them, if you only wanted to use a receiver, you'd still have to have a power supply. So it was kind of, maybe for four issues or so, it was kind of a serial in QST. So the first couple of them were on building the power supply, and then building a simple receiver, and building then a transmitter. And you did it all on a board, a small board. You could take 1 6-foot piece of pine. It was called a pine board radio. That's why I know the species of wood. You could take a 6-foot piece that was, say 14 inches wide, maybe even smaller, and you can make the whole radio on these wooden boards, and you'd have to connect the power supply to the other two, of course. You'd have to interconnect them, and you'd be turning one off, turning the other on, turning that off, turning the other on. You'd be doing that because there was no push to talk. And, you know, connect a microphone to it and a speaker. Yeah, you could build it all in pieces. And some people did that. I mean, there were, you know, there were issues about the supply of tube sockets. The tubes might still be available because they just never go. If they're in the package, they don't go bad. If they're not handled rough, you know, they don't go bad. They will eventually wear out in service, but that might be a long time. And so there's still plenty of vacuum tubes out there, but the tube sockets to plug them into, that's gotten kind of rare, you know. If you're going to build your own tube equipment, you need a socket, you know. You might salvage from old stuff. You might salvage the tube sockets you need. But anyway, that was one thing about that that series of articles in QST, lots of discussion about where do I get the parts and pieces that I need to make this, you know. And you had to wind your own coils and stuff like that. It was interesting, and I know a lot of people made them. Do you remember that series of, it goes back maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Do you remember that series?
Seems like I do, because they was talking about something similar like what's on that silver tone I got over here from back in 1940. They call it a power shifter, but all it is a power supply. Well, you was building a power supply with vacuum tubes in it.
Another reason why the power supply was the first thing to build was that you would have to, you know, just take most, you know, people who are getting their license these days. Their Elmers might have helped them out with studying for the license exam and so on and so forth. But nobody these days builds their own radios. Well, I'm not nobody, but you know, very few people build their own stuff. So they would come into the hobby, and you just don't start building tube equipment without, you know, getting to know what you're working with. Because I'm sure you're aware that there are very high voltages inside tube equipment. Generally around 600 volts, and that's enough to take all the color out of your hair. It puts you under the ground, too. If you don't discharge the capacitors, because tube stuff had to warm up, you know. The capacitor had to reform. Even if it was just off for overnight or something, the capacitor had to reform. So the tubes would warm up, the capacitors would reform, and everything had to balance itself out, you know. And that would take a minute or two. It wasn't instant on, but the voltages, and you build these on pine boards, right? All that stuff is exposed. So safety was the first thing they covered in building the power supply, the first thing. The fact that you're working with 600 volts, and it's right out there to touch. you know, be careful and be sensible if you want to do this sort of thing. It was a whole different way of, a whole different kind of respect for the equipment that you used. You know, people just take an HT and they toss it around, they put it in a book bag and, you know, carry it, clip it to the side of a bicycle and ride down the road with it, you know, that kind of thing. But back in that day, it was a much more serious thing. And if you were building your own, you had to have a lot of skills that people just don't have today. You can get them. You can still get them. But most people don't bother. KK4JBQ.
KI4LZI. You was talking about the tubes. Most tubes are easy to get a hold of unless they're high-demand vacuum. If they're very high demand vacuum tubes, you might not get them so easily. Then you might have to get them, say, out of some place like Russia. But like for that silver tone I got on the other side of the room here, no problem, because they're not high demand tubes. And you was talking about the 600 volts. We've lost somebody here before you and I ever got licensed. You know, he never knew me, because at the time I didn't have my license, but Ray Allison knew him, though, and some of the old ones that died long before him. He used to check in on this net a lot. Briar's net from down there at Batesburg, he had a good antenna system, reason he could get in. Ray told me that that's what got him. He got bit by the vacuum tube amplifier, and that's what took him out. I was wondering what happened to him, and That's what Ray told me.
I had not heard that. I'm sorry for everyone concerned, especially for him. That kind of voltage with the amperage behind it that was necessary, that'll cook you right now. It just destroys human flesh. Heart, probably first. Brain, yeah, that's in line too. You won't last more. You won't even know what hit you. anyway, so modern equipment is much safer. If you could work on it, it's much safer. High voltages aren't there. Going forward, I wonder what it's going to be 20 years from today. I do wonder. It could be anything. Well, Andy, I'm running down, to tell you the truth. I'm looking forward to a real good night's rest. It's been a good day today. We have had, don't you think, we have had a unusual stretch of pretty days. We're going on 2 weeks now without a drop of rain. That's a concern, of course, but we're going into wintertime. We're not asking things to grow. I've got that grass in my yard that goes brown. I forget what zoysia or something. It goes brown. It goes dormant. And you still should water it, I suppose. I don't know. But we stopped watering, and it's real pretty green when the temperatures are up and the humidities and the rains come and such as that, but it goes brown in the wintertime. Kind of distresses me. When I told Tom, N0TR, about that, don't you know he's got my email address, so he sent me a picture of his front lawn, which is a different species of grass, and it was not brown. It was beautiful green. So it's just what was chosen. I didn't choose it. It was what's chosen for the lawn here. And I live in an HOA, so all those considerations are not my business. You know, that lawn is not mine. Even though it's right outside my front door, that lawn belongs to the HOA. It's kind of a different way to live. But that's another thing altogether. I don't wish to open another can of worms. Andy, you have a good night's rest. I know it's coming up on 11 o'clock. So you take your medicine and have yourself a good night's rest. We'll talk again real soon, I hope. This is KK4JBQ. I'm going to bed. 7-3.
5-4-LZI. Sometime another, when you're online there, look through some of those old Sears catalogs. You'll see what I'm talking about the helicopters here and all. Because I'm sure that it's still online somewhere. You'll find and see some of that stuff. And that's how it was in those days, back in those times. KK4JBQ. KI4LZI.